Welcome to Kinfolk War. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories. And this season, we'll be exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're going back to Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
First of her name, the unburnt, the unbroken. Let's go. I'm Paul, and our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, Legend of Korra, Lovecraft Country, and we love every moment of it. We're excited to dive, like, immerse ourselves into the canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and learn about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the very first episode of The House of the Dragon, which aired on HBO this past Sunday.
Woo!
So if you haven't seen it yet, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Why are you here?
Yes.
Go watch it.
Go watch.
What's going on?
Don't know.
We'll be discussing all the content of the show, some of the differences between Fire and Blood and the series, but we will not be spoiling future events from the books, so no worries about that.
Kinfolk, when GOT went off the air, we were a bunch of stray mongrels, starving for content, undisciplined. But now, we're reinvigorated in a pack of hounds, ready for adult content like Lady Mysyria is ready to start off her own triarchy with the Prince of the City. Sometimes you just need a mid-bone pep talk. Just is how it is. Let's go!
I really like how she reminded him that he wields Dark Sister during her little
He does. And I was wondering which sword she was speaking about. Like, which one? This is what I wanted to know.
So, we're going to do a very short recap of some of the important plot points from this episode. At the Great Council of 101, 1,000 lords of Westeros come to Harrenhal to decide who will be the heir to King Jaehaerys I. The lords decide on his grandson, Viserys, over his granddaughter, who is older and technically ahead of him in line.
Yes.
Rhaenys.
We stand a real queen. Give her the crown.
So, 9 years into Viserys' reign, his brother Daemon has become an ongoing headache for the small council. They've had enough of him. As commander of the City Watch, the prince is known for being brutal and acting with impunity. Daemon is also Viserys' logical heir, much to the frustration of the King's Hand, Otto Hightower.
Is like, you know, impunity what we're calling castration? Cutting off cocks and
what a mess. That scene was, I was just like, do we have to see all of this? I got it. He's cutting off limbs. Do we need to have a pile of limbs at the end of the scene?
Viserys is unconcerned about the whole secession thing because he is certain, sure, he had a dream and all the dragons roared as one and he is going to have a son. Queen Emma has lost several children in childbirth, sadly, and shortly after has one living child, right? She has Princess Rhaenyra, the realm's delight. Delightful she is. When Queen Emma goes into labor and the baby will not come because it's breech, the maesters give the king a difficult choice. Save the child or lose them both. He chooses to save the child, and he chooses to do this by not talking to his wife at all and cutting the baby out of his wife, which kills her in the bed. But both Emma and their baby boy, Balon, the name they had picked out, die. Viserys, frustrated with things that we'll discuss, settles on Rhaenyra as his heir and calls all the lords of Westeros to King's Landing to swear fealty to her and bend the knee. Epic scene. He also tells her an important Targaryen secret. Their ancestor Aegon had a dream about a long winter that would sweep the continent and a Targaryen must sit on the throne in order to save the people of Westeros from this looming threat. So, Argilac the Arrogant, you're off the hook. It wasn't the hands in the box. Who knew?
I'm sure I couldn't help, but...
I'm sure, you know, I have a little theory about that whole story and how it fits in, but let's talk about how we feel about the premiere first. How did you feel?
I liked it. I thought it was great. It felt really good to be back in the world. It took a little while to settle back in. Like, the voiceover was kind of jarring. We're not used to that kind of narration. And then it, you know, like flying over King's Landing, it just, King's Landing feels really different. But once we were kind of settled into the world, I thought it was great. The acting was really phenomenal. Yeah. I think they set up the characters really well in this first episode. I have to say, I wanted some more dragons, but the ones we got were beautiful. So that was exciting. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm like very hyped to talk about this for the next 9 weeks.
Yeah, me too. I'm extremely excited. Like, I don't think I've had that feeling except for before the Jet season starts and I realize that they suck, and the Super Bowl. Like, those are the two times. Like, yesterday I was like, I couldn't contain it. I was like, oh my God. I was almost too hyped. And I think I have a little bit of PTSD because as the dragon scene was happening, I was like, oh my God, there's some other fantasy shows that have been on TV that will remain unnamed that are not as good, and their CGI and their special effects are really terrible. Don't let this happen to our favorite show. And then it settled in and it was good. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's just something like about King's Landing that didn't feel real.
You know what I think it is? Is it supposed to, they kind of spoke to that they wanted it to look newer, and it did look newer. Like, we kind of, it felt like, you know, cleaner and sparkling, and we're not used to that in King's Landing. King's Landing, when we find it in Game of Thrones, is pretty. It's a fucked up play. It's pretty beat up, you know? So I don't know. Maybe that was it.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's, again, this is nitpicking. I otherwise was fully behind it.
Yeah.
It just, that initial scene with Rhaenyra flying over King's Landing, you know, had me, I was like, oh no. Like, I took in a sharp breath and then I settled in. It, like, once they were in the Red Keep, I was like, ah, okay. Much better.
Yeah, I was pretty close once Dougal McKenzie showed up.
He was great. Can we just say, Graham McTavish is a joy.
He is. He really is. And he's really great in this so far.
I know that, you know, friend of the pod, Sloan, is not a fan, but I am a fan. I like Graham McTavish.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, I don't love him in Outlander, but that's a whole different story for a whole different time. But yeah, no, I love it. I loved it. I was excited the whole way. I think it lands. There's so many beats that are like really, really cool. And I really love that the tie-ins are really strong in this episode. I mean, it's really like calls back without being copycatty, like things that we have seen before about the world. And that really got me excited. Like, you know, there's so much, right? Let's talk about like Nymeria being mentioned. What about that? Like, I mean, come on. Like, they're already talking about 10,000 ships.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting story for Rhaenyra and Alicent to be reviewing, because they did kind of in the very next, I think it was the scene before that, but earlier in the episode, her mom, you know, was talking to her. We'll talk a little bit more about this later, about like the duty of a royal princess and what it is that their role is. And she was like, I'd rather be a knight, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think in speaking about Nymeria, they're drawing a direct parallel to Arya, signaling to us that Rhaenyra has a warrior spirit, which is something I didn't think of her in reading the books. I thought that, you know, she comes off in the book, I think, a little bit more stern than I was expecting her, than I anticipated her to be in the show. She is really charming. I can understand why they call her the Realm's Delight. She's very sweet, and she's very competent and smart. And I just thought the Nymeria discussion was like a great way to kind of remind us of another character who we've yet to meet from Westeros' history that, you know, ties her directly to one of our most beloved characters, which is Arya Stark.
What do you think about the fact that there's a death of an Arryn in this series, which is a brutal death? Like, goodness. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, so both Game of Thrones and this series start off with the death of a important figure at court from House Arryn. Emma is a Targaryen, but she's also an Arryn by birth. And so I just thought that was interesting that they took a death that happens basically off page. I mean, like, it's mentioned on page, but it's not, there's no details about it, and made it front and center, and also made it the catalyst for basically every, like, the falling action of the episode, which, you know, Viserys is kind of like a little bit less engaged at the beginning of the episode, and by the end he has to make a decision. And so now I think he's thinking of a little bit more of a clear head, which is, I cannot leave this seat to Daemon, my brother. So I must leave it to Rhaenyra. But I thought that, like, that symmetry between Emma dying, which was a horrible scene, and we should spend a few minutes talking about it. And Jon Arryn dying, which is essentially like the beginning of Game of Thrones. I thought that was interesting that both shows started out with a member of the Arryns of the Vale dying.
Yeah.
Emma's scene. Okay. I've seen a lot of discourse about this online. I'm really torn about this. It was a really difficult scene to watch, and I think we're supposed to be extremely uncomfortable. But Emma dies in a way that, and this is actually true of a lot of the women in Fire and Blood. It's almost like they get a sentence. So-and-so died in childbirth. So-and-so had a difficult childbirth and died shortly after. Like, it's never, they're never a full person. Mm-hmm. Or when people start to talk about them, it's always after they've died. Mm-hmm. I really liked that they set up Queen Emma in a way that we very briefly got to know her a little mm-hmm. bit. I mean, obviously we didn't get to know her well. But I like that they gave her death some meaning and gave her like real relationships that felt authentic with both her husband and her daughter. I do think that maybe I think the scene went on too long. Upon second watch, it was really difficult to watch her being brutalized in that way for so long. I'm not sure that I agree. It could have been, some people have been saying it should have been off screen entirely. I'm not sure that I would want that. I think it should, the action, like when you're, something like that is happening, you should focus on the person it's happening to.
Yeah.
I think that scene was troubling, but it did reveal something about Viserys that I hadn't thought of, I hadn't had before, which is a sense of him is a person aside from just being a little bit like on, like, I don't want to call the man incompetent, but decisions are not his strong suit. And so I was really troubled by the depiction of him making this decision, which I think wasn't really a choice, right? I think this was like, you can lose both of them or you can try to save the baby. But the fact that he didn't speak to her, the fact that he basically allowed her to be cut open like that without knowing what was happening to her, I don't know if his character can come back from that for me. I was pretty angry. I mean, I've never had any feelings about Viserys, and I was pretty angry.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Doesn't talk to her at all. He's out here saying, oh, I love you. You know, it's okay. It's okay. As then she starts to realize, you know, what is about to happen to her. She's like terrified and she's screaming. And I mean, there's no way to justify it, right? Like, that should have been something that was discussed even in that moment.
Yeah, it was a decision they should have made together.
100%.
You know, even if Emma says, you know, I want to keep trying for another couple of hours or whatever, but it's a decision she should make together. And I think the reason that it's hit a nerve is because a lot of C-sections still go down like this, where women are not heard, their discomfort and pain are not acknowledged. Like, I think that when Rhaenyra said to her, all of these people are here to tend to the babe, someone has to look after you, I think a lot of women have felt that that's what the treatment that they've received when they give birth is, that everyone's 100%. Like focus on the baby and the mother comes second. So I think that's why this bothers us, because it, you know, in our world, in present day, this is still reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought about this a lot too. I thought about what you're saying about what happens in the books. I think that often in the books, you're right, it is one sentence, it moves on. But these births and these deaths play a big part in the story, and buckle up, because I'm hearing that there's more that will happen in these kind of situations. They're trying to make a point about the way that the realm treats women in these situations, and they're trying to make a point. From what I heard with the interview with Ryan Condon, he's like, yeah, they're gonna talk about this more, about the place of like how the realm takes away some of the choice of women through succession, but also through the family structure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, I think there's going to be more controversial scenes like that. And I think a lot of people are rightfully nervous. The series that came before this treated women terribly.
Yeah.
And punished women and girls regularly. And so I think it comes down to the sensitivity of which, you know, how they treat those moments. You know, I found this moment to be just too long. But I think I'm almost always going to want to have on screen a focused on the person that it's happening to, a moment of suffering that is very important to the plot. And obviously this was very important to the plot. Not just the fact that the baby died, which is not, like, we find that out after the scene is over, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, that Emma died. And I think it tells us, you know, Rhaenyra is forever changed by the death of her mother. And I'm sure extremely resentful at her father. And I don't even think she knows what happened, right?
Well, she does have that line where she says, I wonder if my dad was happy for that brief moment while he had a son. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
That's like, you know, that's a loaded thing, right? It's not just about her just being a daughter. It's about how much he didn't see the trauma that her mother was going through trying to bring forth this son when she was already here.
Yeah.
I think this scene also is a callback to the scene with Lyanna Stark and Ned Stark when Lyanna's giving birth to Jon. I mean, we can kind of go into that. I mean, this really plays into this whole thing around the symmetry between that, this scene, and also this idea that there is a secret inside of the Targaryen family that we just find out about, which is Aegon's dream and what the conversation is with in that last scene with Rhaenyra and Viserys. I mean, it obviously ties it back when he says, promise me twice.
Yeah, I got chills the second time I watched it when he says, promise me, Rhaenyra. And then it goes back to, they cut in with the scene of all the lords kneeling to her. And mm-hmm. then his words, promise me, just play over that again. And I was like, oh my goodness. That was like an ongoing refrain in Ned Stark's head when his sister said, promise me. Mm-hmm. And that's in the very first book, A Game of Thrones. Like, he's struggling, he's hearing that her voice say, promise me. Mm. So I thought that, or do you want to just talk about this whole bombshell that they dropped at us.
Let's talk about it. It's a big thing that is going to play out, obviously, throughout the series. This is huge, huge news, right?
Okay, so full disclosure, the internet has been abuzz about this particular thing.
To say the least.
for weeks, though. This is not, like, so this wasn't entirely new information to me. If you know where to look for spoilers and leaks and stuff, you can find them. And in checking on another show, actually, Westworld, I had accidentally come across someone who had talked about this happening in the show. I didn't know it was going to be in the very first episode. I actually didn't realize that until later. Despite the fact that I was kind of prepped for this, I was still stunned into silence at first. And then, like, I had an outburst. I was like, I cannot believe this is happening.
Yeah.
I feel I'm a little upset that this came out in this way. I think I like the idea from a story point of view of giving the Targaryens a real reason for craving power and believing that they are the best people to lead Westeros.
Yeah.
That said, it changes my view of so many things in a way that I haven't even fully processed. I mean, I'm still like every few hours being like, wait, but what about this? I have a few things that I'm a little irritated about.
Well, before we go too deep, let's talk yeah. about what it is, right? So, like, we're talking about this conversation with Rhaenyra and Viserys, who he basically talked about Aegon's dream being about a song of ice and fire, which is a direct quote for basically that says, you know, Aegon foresaw the end of the world of men. It's to begin with a terrible winter gusting out of the distant north. Aegon saw absolute darkness riding on those winds, and whatever dwells within will destroy the world of the living. When the great winter comes, Rhaenyra, all of Westeros must stand against it. And if the world of men is to survive, a Targaryen must be seated on the Iron Throne. A king or queen, you know, that whole prince that was promised, prophecy, king or queen, where there was a language barrier, strong enough to unite the realm against the cold and dark. Aegon called his dream a song of ice and fire. I'm okay with it. I know everybody's, I'm okay with it.
I think I'm getting used to it, but here's my questions. Okay, so this we know that this came directly from George R. R. Martin. So this is not some weird HBO retcon, right? Mm-hmm. This is his work. And he said that this is true, that Aegon had a dream and that is what inspired him to conquer Westeros. And I don't actually have problems. I saw a lot of people talking about online about how, like, the dream is still irrelevant because of how the series ended. I actually don't think it is, but we can talk about that we can spend more time with that when we know more about this, you know, how this dream is understood in the Targaryen family. But one thing that bothers me about it is a couple of things, which is one, this could have been in Fire and Blood. I know that people are saying that, you know, he could put this in Winds of Winter, but apparently he had this idea as early as 2018. It could have been mentioned in Fire and Blood, which would have been explosive at the time.
But I think there's a mention in Fire and Blood. This made me think about it because I was thinking about this also. And there's a mention in Fire and Blood and in the history of Westeros, because basically the first portions of those books are almost exactly the same. Actually, most of it is verbatim, where before he invades Westeros, he actually goes into, remember I made the joke earlier and I thought about this. He goes into the Sept and there's like days of him like praying, resting, thinking about with the people what he's going to do. It could very well be that he was like got the hands back, whatever it is, and that the dream came during that moment. And that really stuck with me today. I was thinking about it. I was like, when would he have had this dream? When did this happen? Because I know Danish the Dreamer got them the Dragonstone. This was like there was years and years of people living on Dragonstone, which when you think about it, it doesn't make much sense for them to just all of a sudden just him be like, I want to attack, because they were on Dragonstone forever, 2 seconds away from King's Landing. If they wanted to attack when they first got there, they would have just done it. So something happened, and I thought the moment I pinpointed in the book was, that isn't obviously, it's my own headcanon, is like, it's that moment when he's in the Sept for days that he has the dream or the vision.
Yes, and there's also a portion, I believe, where him and Visenya spend significant time at Old Town. Who knows what's... yes, okay. I have no problem with when the dream could have happened. I guess I'm curious about then, like, why the Targaryens allowed the men of the Night's Watch to fall into disarray. As far as we know, Aegon never visited the Wall. Never, like, I'm just having issues with it in that regard. Again, I can get behind this because it does something that Fire and Blood never did for me, which was give me a reason why Rhaenyra really cared about this.
Yeah.
Because you see, okay, so folks, we're going to talk a little bit about Fire and Blood now, but like, we're not talking about events forward. We're only talking about things that came before Rhaenyra. Women get passed over regularly, right?
Yeah.
We talked about this on our preview podcast, but the original woman to be passed over was Rhaena, who is Jaehaerys's older sister. And she was upset that she didn't get everything she wanted, but she went on and lived her life. And here we have Rhaenys, who, you know, has a little resentment, but I don't think she's out here trying to sabotage Jaehaerys or anything like that. And so I guess we know that this story, just based on the trailer, is a struggle for Rhaenyra in of getting her birthright, which is this becoming the queen of Westeros. This gives her the motivation that I don't think she had in Fire and Blood, which is it's a more pure motivation, because it seemed before to me that all of the Targaryens were just kind of power hungry. And so this gives them a little bit, makes them more complicated characters and gives them a little cover that's not just about power hungry. What I'm curious about is where does this go from this point? Are we going to see ripple effects of this, you know, when did this information stop getting passed down? And just based on the information that we have from the looking forward preview, we know that the prince that was promised is going to come up. So I want to know how it all links through. So we'll see. I'm just not super comfortable with it right now. I can get there. I like parts of it. Other parts of it frustrate me. And those of you who have ever spoken to me about these books know that every time George throws in like a new thing, I get upset and then I get over it. So I felt this way about Fagon. Like, I had a very strong feelings.
Oh, the Fagon rants are epic. If only you guys could tap our phones and listen to the Fagon rants. Oh my God, it's so good. They're so good.
Yeah, so I will get over it. It will be fine. I'm sometimes resistant to change in my stories. Especially when I've spent so much time on a story, I'm like, oh, so now you're telling me this. Anyway, I will get over it. But I do think it's interesting. Like, this, it was a bombshell. And this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to make a splash on the first night.
Yeah, I also think that, like, you know, like you're saying about the people getting passed over and the whole thing, there's a few things that come up in this whole thing that they're going to have to answer. And you're right about... this gives you a grounding for Rhaenyra's motivations that did not exist in Fire and Blood. And where I know, and you know, and anyone who's read those books knows this story is going, it also prevents them from having a series, without giving too much away, a similar letdown at the end of this season, at the end of this series. Which was one of my major concerns when I read the book. I was like, whoa, I called you and I was like, whoa, so are we just going to go here? Like, this is what we're going to do? So I think, like, that's something that is going to be interesting to see how they play that out.
Yeah, we have to be a little vague here because, like, I know what you're saying, but it's a huge spoiler.
It's so a huge spoiler. I can't say what I'm thinking, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, so those of you who read the books will understand that. We'll probably know what we're hinting at. But I'm excited now. Like, even though I was really annoyed by this last night, I am excited to see where they take it. And I think that's the whole point of it, which is, like, it's reengaging the people who really have already had their own theories about the story and are, like, really feel like they know these characters. I think this gives a whole different, puts the whole Targaryen dynasty in a different light for me.
It also keeps adding to my theory that I'm holding on to, that if Snow gets greenlit, that is Game of Thrones season 9. Like, honestly, I truly believe George is invested, without going too far down the meta world because we want to stay in this story. I really think he's invested in telling the story that he didn't feel like he got to get across. There's things that I really truly believe that he did not get to get into season 7 and 8 that he would have liked to. And so I think this is going to change the way that this all thing, I think they're going to make a concerted effort to tell the story because he's involved in this so heavily in every one of these things that he wants to tell all of them. Cause I think Condon was surprised by this. I've listened to and read many different accounts where Ryan Condon was like, what did you just say? Cause he couldn't believe it. And just like, we couldn't believe it. And that's why I think it shows up where it shows up.
Yeah. And I guess my big question after all of the like hand wringing I did, I was like, did Maester Aemon know this? like that would change also maybe his motivations for going to the wall.
I thought about this and it wouldn't make sense, right? Because he could know it because brothers talk, but he's the second born son, right? Of the king. So when he decided to become a maester, it was because he was like, I got an older brother. He's the heir. We'll be fine. The dynasty will continue. So his older brother, Arian, would have been the one who would have been probably told the secret. But then Arian dies. Now, in that moment, maybe not because he didn't go to that because of that, but in that moment, the whole realm wanted him to become the king. They're like, we don't care that you're a maester. You should just come in and be a king. And he refused the throne and passed it to, you know, King Aegon V. So the fact that he's like, I don't know, I think the fact that he's, that people wanted him to be, maybe the secret was given to him as well in that moment. Maybe someone passed the secret when they were like, yo, you need to be king. And maybe he thought, well, I could do better work. Let's go to my brother. I can do better work at the wall than the actual thing is me being at the wall, making sure that I protect this from this secret. So it's possible, but they're going to have to, that's the thing they're going to have to, they're going to have to explain. They're going to have to explain that. And they're going to have to, because there's multiple, without giving things away, break points in the line of succession in the Targaryen dynasty that they'll have to explain how this secret gets handed to each person if they're only going one-to-one or if there's a couple of people that know.
Well, we also don't know if Rhaenyra will share it with anyone, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like, It's a heavily guarded secret right now. Two people in this world have the information. One is Viserys and the other is Rhaenyra, his, you know, newly minted heir. That doesn't mean that one or both of them won't share it with someone else. So I think there's a lot here. It's a very like, I think this is a thing that like, those people who were 110% invested in Game of Thrones and have read and really into like this fandom in general will care deeply about. I think the casual viewer is not going to engage with it in the same way, but I think that's okay.
But I think this helps the casual viewer, right? I agree with you that it won't be invested in the same, but I think it helps the casual viewer in one way. It connects this story that they're like, I don't know any of these people. I'm not really emotionally invested in any of the people here because I haven't read the books. I'm just like watching the show because I heard it was connected to Game of Thrones. And here's multiple tie-ins throughout the episode, the cat's paw dagger, the you know, the night, the prophecy or dream about, you know, a winter and a darkness that would last for days, but only lasted a night.
Okay, see, this is where this is where Reddit was last night. Reddit was very much like days, weeks, months. This thing was a few hours.
Yes.
I refuse to engage with those folks. I'm gonna make a choice. That choice is to let myself settle into this and go back to my old days of theorizing. And so I think this is a theory that has legs. I'm just feeling a lot of feelings about it.
Well, listen, the Targaryens always fucked up prophecy, okay? They had all kind, like, they had good things and bad things. They were hit and miss. It never was, so maybe they, you know, days, weeks, months, a night, couple hours, you know? who's counting?
Yeah, I mean, I do, before we move on, I do want to say one thing, like, about these books, this story and prophecy. Prophecy is never straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
So in my thinking about, like, either how much the Targaryens jacked this whole thing up and messed everything up, or how much they played into it and made things happen, I just sort of decided not to do any of that, because in this story, prophecies are never what you think they are. Yeah. It's not... they're not quite a riddle like sometimes they are in other stories, but they're never exactly what they can be interpreted a lot of ways, and they're never exactly what you think they are. There isn't just one chosen one, right? We always had that language, prince or princess, Azor mm-hmm. Ahai, or the prince that was like, there was always a lot happening here, and then there was the comet and just all this other stuff. So I'm willing to dive into prophecy soup and see where the pieces fit and how they play out. I'm excited about at least the internet theories that I'll get to read, because there's some really good Song of Ice and Fire theories that I would read over and over again because they were so engaging. I think there's a lot to be done with this one too.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting too is the tie-in. One of the things I think that's important to state before we totally move on from this is the tie-in between Aemon and Rhaegar and why Daenerys wouldn't have this information, and also Samwell Tarly, right? So what I mean by that in my mind, the way I'm connecting it, is like we see in this preview for next week, they're talking about, you see Rhaenyra reading about the prince that is promised and coming from his blood and the Song of Ice and Fire. In the lore, there's Rhaegar was not really into fighting or a warrior or any of these things. And he was very bookish. And through his reading, he comes across this prophecy about the prince that was promised and his will be the Song of Ice and Fire. And so he becomes obsessed with it and realizes and comes out of it saying, I need to become a warrior, which is why he becomes a fighter, because he really wasn't into that. He was more into poetry and singing, and like he was more like Aegon's younger sister, Rhaenys. And so then he decides he's going to become a warrior based on this information. So to me, that connects those two. How I get there in my mind with Sam naming it that is Sam is also bookish and also is a researcher and perhaps came across, maybe got into similar reading and was like, oh yeah, that guy that couldn't name the book, the maester who couldn't name his chronicles, it should be named this because it is a Song of Ice and Fire, right? And this is like basically what this reading that I found is. So I kind of connect, I'm connecting those threads already. Obviously there's a lot of story, a lot of like runway here for this series, but it seemed, this is where I kind of made sense of it all and them even mentioning it in this episode.
We will talk a lot more about this, because as we've mentioned, it's obviously something the show is going to dive more into. I think there's a lot here. But I also hope the show doesn't get too bogged down by it. You know, yeah, I do worry about that a little bit, because sometimes the like speculation and theories actually didn't make being a fan of Game of Thrones much fun. They sometimes were frustrating. So I guess we'll just have to see. This is, you know, they dropped a bomb and now we're going to have to see where the fallout is.
Yeah, for sure. Can we talk about the tourney a little bit?
I have very little to say about the tourney.
I mean, really what I want to talk about is Lord Breezebury. All right. I just want to say Lord Breezebury is the, he's out here placing FanDuel bets on Joust.
That was so messed up.
The motherfucker's out here like, I got a couple of shackles on Damon. Let's go. Like, place that bet now. Like, let's go. I'm ready. And right next to his pops. I love, and Damon's like, I'm going to fuck up your son. I'm going to flirt with your daughter. I'm going to give you the stink eye because I just hate you, Otto. And you know what? I'm here for it because I fucking hate Otto too. I'm here for it.
Mostly my observations about the tourney, this was quality time with the Valerian family. And so I had two main observations from the tourney. I mean, the whole tourney kind of just gave me it was almost like Robert's tourney that he held for Ned. It said something more about Robert than it did about anyone, aside from maybe the Mountain who lost his shit. But this tourney, so many rules were broken. It was just kind of chaos. And I really appreciated Rhaenys's comment, basically calling these knights the Knights of Summer. I mean, she didn't say it that way.
No, she did. She basically called, she was like, they're as green as summer grass. I was like, holy shit.
But she was basically like, you know, her and Corlys had this very interesting conversation that I really enjoyed, which was, observing, like, is this even the right way you want to welcome your heir into the world? Like, why are we doing this? And
talking queen and king shit. That's why.
There were two moments in the episode where I was like, I wonder what the great council lords think of this, which was that Corlys was very seriously trying to talk about policy in the small council meeting, mm-hmm. and Otto cut him off because he was tired of hearing it. And then they all wanted to talk about Damon.
Yeah. And Otto's got in a pissing contest with Damon. He just doesn't. And to be fair, Damon brings this up. Like, why am I not by your side, bro? Like later on. And it's true. Otto is not the guy. And regime change. Change the fucking cabinet. Otto was at the end of King Jaehaerys' reign was the hand of the king. Otto Hightower should not still be Viserys' hand of the king. Damon definitely has a point in saying that he thought that he should be next to his brother. Like, I don't know if he should have been hand, but definitely closer in proximity. And Otto keeps manipulating and pulling the wheels of power around this whole situation.
I agree. I think Corlys would have made a better hand of the king based on what we've seen of him far. But, you know, Viserys has very high opinion of Otto. He even tells Damon that he thinks he's a better man than he is, more honorable. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. I did think it was interesting, though, just back to Rhaenys and Corlys for a moment. I thought it was interesting the show gave us this point of view about them twice, right? That first Corlys on his own is trying to talk about this triarchy, which is, you know, possibly going to, you know, affect the supply lines to Westeros, between Westeros and Essos. And it was sort of like, whatever, they're getting rid of the pirates, no concern. And then for his wife to make that observation about just like, well, like, what are we even doing here? Why is this a thing? I just thought that was a great showing for both of them. I already really like this family. I will say I found the wigs on the children to be troubling. But Lyanna and Lenore both had wigs that I was like, why are we doing season two Where Are My Dragon type wigs for these kids. But hopefully they will fix it up.
I hope so later. Too. But I will say this. I mean, you know how I feel about the Valerian family and where they should be. I mean, and it's proven actually through it's not actually law that she should have been passed over and that they shouldn't be they're part of the royal family, but like the royal family, right? And I kind of think it's kind of wild when you think about by tradition, like of traditional inheritance law, like essentially, even if they didn't give Rhaenys the crown and they went by the male preference or gender or went gender blind, they could have went to her son or even her daughter. Mm-hmm. Like, right. So at that point, it just feels like this was a huge, they just, and I think that's going to be, I mean, Corlys is going to be pissed about that. Definitely.
Can we just talk about who's pissed about it and hilarious? Look at Stannis Baratheon's ancestor out here being like, I would like to get the favor of the queen that never was. My cousin, who should have been queen.
Yeah.
My guy was hilarious. I was just like, wow, okay, this is Baratheon saltiness all over again, just being totally angry over something. A perceived slight, and it's not even at you.
Yeah, Boroman Baratheon is showing up like, yo, listen, this is fucked up, man. Like, we supposed to be have like right to the royal line. And you know what's wild? Is then you really see Otto come out. Otto's like, you know, you can have Boroman Baratheon's tongue for that. He says, the tongue won't actually change the succession, dude. So let's just let the tongues wag. How about that one? Let's just be cool. Otto's like ready to cut out this guy's tongue just for saying it.
He said it anyway. He couldn't have cared less. I respect to my man for throwing shade right in the king's face.
And now that we're back at the fucking tourney, can we just talk about the puking squire in the background, yo? Oh man, he spoke for all of us in our hearts.
The tourney was hard. There was so much violence in this episode, and I think it's just been a while since we've seen this type of violence. But yeah, there were points throughout this episode, both of the City Watch scene and the tourney, where I was just like, oh yes, okay, we really are back. Like, this
as my man Corlys Velaryon said, wanton violence. What is this wanton violence? Is this how we should bring a prince into this world? With this wanton violence. I was like, man, look at it. He even talks like a king consort. Oh man. Well, I think Otto does reveal himself in the council as he's going after Daemon and saying something. The gods have yet to make a man who lacks the patience for absolute power. Boy, talk about telling on yourself. That should like be like on his tombstone. That should be the tombstone of this guy. Big Tywin vibes.
Yeah, big Tywin vibes. I didn't fully have the Tywin vibes until he sent his daughter to go comfort the king.
But and Tywin then I was like, light.
Oh, wow.
Like Tywin light, not real, like big Tywin scheming energy, not Tywin I'm a warrior energy. I don't see that in him. Like Tywin is out here in the field, okay? I don't want to besmirch my boy's name too much with this fucking Otto Hightower.
Okay, give the man a chance. Let's see. Let's see. Wow, you're so defensive. It's been one episode and you're already like, nah, he's not Tywin. I don't want to hear it.
Nah, he's not, yo. Listen, by the way, his son took a major face plant. What a fucking, like, tough look.
It's so funny because I don't like Otto either for a lot of reasons. But I actually really took offense when he cut off Corlys, because Corlys was like, I have business to speak about and I don't think you heard me because this other guy cut me off first. And then he cut him off again. And so I was like, I don't like this guy. I'm out on him. And so then when Daemon challenged his son, I was like, yeah. And then I was like, wait, the son didn't do anything. I was like, why do I have vengeance in my heart for the son? He didn't do anything.
Because the Hightowers are showing themselves to be who they are, you know, like, except, At this point, Allison seems kind of, I mean.
I like Allison at this point. I mean, I think that they made her very, like a character I could have a lot of empathy for when she looked deeply uncomfortable when her father said, go comfort the king. She was kind of like waiting, like, what do you mean? I think she does genuinely love Rhaenyra, and I think she did genuinely care for her mother. And I think that she also, you know, Allison lost her mother as well. And so I like her so far, but, you know, we'll see, because her father's a schemer. And it does make me think of, like, what was Cersei Lannister before she was kind of forced to marry Robert?
Yeah, and she's gone through some levels of trauma and has high... it's like she's definitely having bouts of anxiety, as you know, shown, like she's picking at her fingers, and it's, she's having like a lot, something's going on a deeper level. Even when she's going to give Damon her favor and she looks back at her father, and her father is like grilling her, like hardcore grilling her, you can tell that she changes her demeanor, goes from smiling and kind of like, okay, cool, whatever, to like concerned that she for her safety and well-being. Like, this guy does not seem cool.
Yeah, I'm already a little bit protective of her, just because it does seem something going. She's very fidgety. She seems to be a pawn in this larger game, and she doesn't seem like the most willing one yet. So, you know, we'll see how her character develops over time. But I did have empathy I wasn't expecting for her. So,
I wasn't either. You know, I wasn't expecting to have empathy for her either.
So I'm always a little protective of teenage girls anyway, because I do recall being one and just feeling like you're powerless. So we'll see. I obviously, from the previews, we know something's going to happen between her and Rhaenyra, and that dagger is going to come out. But I need to know what happens. Like, what is that event that changes her demeanor so radically? Because she seems very kind and supportive in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. And I think she's also, but there's an underlying thing, right? There's like, she tries really hard, and she's deathly afraid of authority. And she doesn't even, if you think little Q, she doesn't really even enter Queen Emma's room. And she kind of stands at the door with kind of like meekly, when they're inside the Godswoods, she's like really like, she speaks about, you know, the scepter being like really upset if you give that answer, and that she has to get this stuff. And she's very like, you know, it's like she's very, very, very rigid in like her idea of like how it needs to work, which is a lot of the signs of like someone who has like been told, been prodded to be perfect and make all the right decisions. And maybe this is a game that she hasn't signed up for, where Rhaenyra has all the safety and comfort, which is one of the things I really mm-hmm. loved about this show. First of all, let's get this. Do we have watches? Do we need hourglass? Like, let's help Rhaenyra with her time management skills. She's really late. She's late at the tourney. She's late to the council meeting. She's running late most times, all right? She wasn't late to her.
She's a princess.
I know, exactly. So the point is that that's what I mean, is that she has this safety, this thing of like, yeah, I'm the princess. I kind of like, she kind of feels like that, where Allison doesn't feel like, she doesn't feel like she knows her space or her place. Like, she's kind of like very, I wouldn't say reserved, but just like you see Rhaenyra very much owning her space, where Allison is like kind of like not taking up her space in the world at this point.
Yeah, anyway. I would agree with that. We've talked about most of the characters, but I don't think we've spent nearly enough time on Damon, who I think was in many ways like the breakout character that left many people abuzz. What did you think about his depiction?
I think it's hard not to like the guy and dislike him all at the same time. Like, he's got this thing, first of all, I think that I love that he's able to get in and out of the city without people noticing, right? I love that he's able to move stealthily, which is, you know, I think going to play out over the course of the season and over the course of the series in a way that that will, some things will happen that'll be interesting. I love the relationship between him and Rhaenyra, even though it's like kind of, you know, because it's kind of like there's like a weird vibe there too, because, you know, it's his niece. But, you know, in our world, that would be fucking strange. But, you know, we're in Game of Thrones world. So let's just say that there's like a vibe that's going on there. And I think that that's not unintentional. I think he really does. I think there's a warmth between the two of them. Beyond just like all that, and he loves his family. I think there's a warmth between him and Viserys, to be quite honest. I think like even when he's at, after the night of like going out with the gold cloaks, by the way, an order that he established and clothed, right? Like he created this thing that we saw in Game of Thrones. That is his creation, right? So this is the first time that the city, I mean, listen to Viserys, like, I think this city watch could be a good idea. You know, like the city's really gone down since my grandmother's passed, right? So, I love what he's doing, and I mean, you know, he's a swordsman in every aspect of the word, right? Like, I mean, it's hard. He was great on both counts. He was bored in a brothel. He was like, she's like, you know, Viserys, like, hey, you know, maybe I'll bring in a maiden, a maiden or two. Let's go. Come on. It was pretty hilarious.
I am surprised by how unlikable he came off in some scenes, because so I went back and read some of, I guess, you know, the Rogue Prince, that was incorporated into Fire and Blood after this episode. And I was like, wait, all of this stuff happened in the book. But when it happened in the book, I was like, meh, he seems fine. He is the comparison to Maegor, who Maegor the Cruel actually tracks. But I didn't feel that when I was reading the book, but watching it play out on television, I was like, okay, yeah, this guy is definitely cruel, and needs some reining in for sure. The way the City Watch is run was super uncomfortable. I mean, first of all, I just want to say it reminded me of some things that were kind of triggering in real life. But in addition to that, it was just like there was no trials. There was no discussion. It was just like, this person's a rapist. This person's a murderer. This person's a thief. Start removing limbs or killing them. I mean, it was a lot to take in. And it does depict him in a light that felt like really harsh. But then when I went back and read, I was like, oh, no, that's straight from the book.
Yeah, but anything. I think George is asking a really interesting question with both Maegor, Aenys, Jaehaerys, Viserys, and Daemon. And it, you know, I think he's asking the question that Machiavelli asked in The Prince: is it better to be feared or loved? And in this moment, you know, Viserys is more loved and beloved, and Daemon thinks that he's weak. But in The Prince, when you think about it, the Machiavelli talks about Cesare Borgias, who would ride into cities and he would slaughter his enemies on the first day so that they all feared him. But then he would then go back and he would do it to set the tone, and then he would start like befriending the people and helping them. And they call him the Prince of the City, which lets you know that while he is cruel on one hand, there's a whole swath of people that respect him and want to be near to him and close to him, because he's able to navigate, you know, he's Lord Fleabottom, so he's known in the brothels. So he's able to walk around the city with some moniker of respect, and some of that comes from the fear. That I don't know that Viserys could walk around Fleabottom and everybody. They may fear his Kingsguard, but they wouldn't fear him.
I mean, fine, but I don't know that being a good leader is just being feared.
So, I agree with that. No, I 100% agree with that. No, I'm not saying that. But I think he's posing that question. I don't think he's saying that it's right to be feared, but I think he's posing that question and like, okay, like it's a similar question to what's in that text. It's like, okay, is it better? And I don't know that the answer is going to be like, yeah, it's better to be feared. But I do think that like that's what's present in this moment. I think that Daemon thinks it's better to be feared. and to be strong, whether it's right or wrong. You know what I mean? Like in that moment.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much I did not like him at all in this first episode. But I have been saying for months that I think that they're painting him as like one of the main antagonists. And that definitely tracked. I mean, he seemed like a real loose cannon who is going to be a problem for everyone except for maybe Rhaenyra, because they seem to have a good relationship. But, you know, she has pretty good relationships with everyone right now, including Otto, who was one of the people who was advocating her being the heir. So I think Daemon was obviously like a breakout character in this first episode. I can't wait to see more of him. But I think that it's going to be surprising to see how these alliances shake out. You know, right now, Corlys and Daemon seem to have some affinity for each other, and he has Corlys's support. He and Rhaenyra are close. Him and Viserys are on the outs at the moment, but it's his brother. I have a hard time thinking that's going to be permanent. And Otto is trying to play all of these relationships against each other or for his benefit. And so I think that it will be interesting to see how they develop his character further. I feel like Daemon Targaryen's a really complex character, and I hope that he gets that treatment and he's just not kind of like this rogue bad boy who wants to be king vibe the whole time. So
I think there's real moments where they showed that, though. I think, like, you know, the moment at the funeral pyre where he says your dad needs you more than ever now, or and he's like talking to her, the tenderness between him and Rhaenyra in the throne room, even though that scene is really powerful in many, many ways, because it's the actual same kind of dynamic as when Ned Stark first walks into the throne room tired and weary from the trip down south from the north and finds Jaime Lannister sitting there in the throne room, even though there's difference in their, you know, their niece and nephew, I mean niece and uncle, and it's like, you know, a different time. It kind of draws your attention back to that moment, like watching that, like, you know, she comes in, he's sitting on the throne. It's kind of like when Jamie was sitting there. To me, I like thought about that scene instantly because I just started my rewatch. But I do think like there's moments, even in the brothel, when he's like, he's really troubled about the succession, even though it's like, man, I can't like really like perform right now. This is like too much. I'm not having a good time. And that's there. But then he's also troubled in the brothel the night when everyone around him is having fun and partying and having sex and drinking. And he's like kind of putting on a show. I don't think that he's really as hyped as he's trying to put on. And I think Matt Smith captures that subtlety as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Matt Smith nailed those scenes.
Yeah.
And gave the exact like tone of performance that was needed. He, as I said, he's just a complex character. I'm glad that people like him because I think that he's one of the more fun characters. I mean, totally. He does cool stuff in this story, and I can't wait to see how they characterize him. And that's the thing about this story. Like, Fire and Blood doesn't fill in this color. We're getting to see these characters in ways that George does not describe them in the books in terms of their motivations, the way that the tone in which they use when they say things. Those like subtle looks that they give people, so much is lost in the way this story is told, but that's why I think this show is going to ultimately work, because they get to build that almost from scratch.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, and you know, they leave it vague. You never actually hear him say the words that he's accused of saying, you know, that, you know, air for a day. You never actually hear that.
You mean
that.
What Otto snitched on him?
Oh, man, snitch, straight snitching. 1-800, I'm telling. I swear, man, this dude is the worst. I think before we start the council meeting, I need to give you an account of, I mean, come on, bro. But I also wonder if some of his advice around Rhaenyra is not rooted in wanting to destabilize the realm, because I just don't understand if they just set this precedent that, you know, Rhaenys should be passed over, why all of a sudden he would be like, yeah, let's go ahead and make Rhaenyra the heir. It can't just be about Daemon, because it also opens up the instability that we're going to fall into later. So I think like it's very, very, it's a very, very interesting play by him. And he seems like a guy that's playing the long game for power.
Yeah, I think he wanted Damon gone. I think that was the main thing. And I don't think that's necessarily the wrong call. I do think that Damon is a little bit more trouble than he's worth right now. But I think that he used Rhaenyra as a way to say, you don't need to leave the succession up to Damon. Like, he doesn't have to be your heir. You have a choice, and that choice is your daughter. I think that, you know, that could be because he's hoping he has some ideas, right, that he's going to try to pull something else. But I think that it's definitely part of a larger plan that Otto has. I don't think it was out of, even though he's Rhaenyra's temporary ally, I don't think it was out of love for Rhaenyra or respect for her. I think it was more like, I got to get rid of this guy. And he already has a track record of doing this. The reason Daemon got the City Watch was because he was trying to get rid of him before. But I am hyped. I want more dragons. It was great to see the two that we saw. It was great to see the dragon pip. More dragons next week, HBO.
Yeah. I do want to talk about one last thing to end. And I guess it's like it's a book to show difference that I think is important to kind of call out, just because I heard a lot of people, I've been listening to coverage and, you know, reading things and talking about Rhaenyra being in the room of the council as the cupbearer and what that meant. And in the show, they haven't really gone into what that means other than she's got like a little bit of a dragon smell to her. And she needs to be on time. But I think what is really interesting is that in the books, it does talk about this idea that Viserys never really had a doubt. It's what's very interesting to me with their framing is that he didn't really think about Daemon as his heir, and that he really did have an, but in Viserys's mind, he already had an heir in Rhaenyra, his sole daughter from his cousin and his cousin Princess Emma, who was his queen, you know, his wife, right? He doted on her, took her everywhere with him, even in the council chamber, where he encouraged her to listen and watch intently. She was doted on so much by the court and everyone also, so they started calling her the realm's delight. So my thing is, like, they've made it where it's kind of like, oh, she's just a cupbearer. But I think he, you know, in the books at least, he's intentionally putting her in the room so she can learn.
I totally agree. And I do think that in the show, they do show her intently listening to the council, and learning things from it. But yeah, I was a little surprised at this notion that, like, Daemon was the heir presumptive in everybody's eyes, not just in his own. Definitely a change from the books, but I understand why they did it, because I think it's kind of hard to build a relationship and build motivations around for screen where there's no tension. And this family is genuinely depicted as having no tension in the book. Like, Emma and Viserys are married. They love their daughter. They love each other. Like, that's it. That's pretty much it. So I think they were trying to build a little bit of tension for Rhaenyra's relationship with her dad by sort of setting it up like the son was so much more important to him. And he did want a male heir. We should be clear about that. It wasn't like he wasn't interested. He was looking for that. But I think he always had faith in his daughter. He just didn't know if the realm would accept her. And the jury's still out on that.
Yeah, but I also noticed a moment too in the council that really struck me, and a couple of things about Viserys that really struck me, was at the council when they name him the king. He looks at his wife, he looks at Emma kind of uncomfortably, right? And then he looks over and he looks at Rhaenys, and they have eye contact. And he's kind of like, I don't know, I read into it a little bit more, but it kind of felt like it was like almost like an acknowledgement, like almost, man, I'm going to do this because, like, whatever. And there's like an agreement between the two of them, like kind of in the eye contact of like almost you know, what's understood doesn't need to be said, right? Like, he has a acknowledgement of her place and what she should have had. But then there's also a moment later on in the episode where he mentions his grandmother, right? and how the city's gone down since she's not been here. He didn't talk about his grandfather, who was the king. So he's also recognizing the matriarch and her role and how she played out in helping to rule, which I thought was really interesting as well, and a nod to his understanding of all this. And I just think that there's a part of him that is holding the weight of knowing that he passed over. The way I'm reading it is that he passed, that Rhaenys was passed over. And I think there's a piece of him that kind of is almost attempting to make it right through this. Like, when he has to, once it's all said and done, he can't have the male heir. He's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And because he was just at the council that only named him king because of what they said about the male line. So it's not like he is unaware of that. He's actually making a conscious choice to say, yeah, no. And there'll be things that will happen later that I won't speak about that will make you say, like, well, man, he's really, like, dug in on this idea.
Yeah, I think that for Rhaenys and Viserys, that accepting what the council said was the most responsible thing to do. I mean, Jaehaerys was trying to avoid a war, and I think that they both understood that. And I think that's why Rhaenys has basically accepted it, right? Her Baratheon family has not accepted it, but her husband sits on the small council. Like, I think that they've essentially both accepted it. And so I think Viserys, I agree. I think Viserys probably would have preferred not to be king, but here he is, and he's not loving making these hard choices, but he has to. So I'm actually kind of happy we're going to get to spend some time with him, because I feel like he doesn't get that much attention in the book. I feel like he gets overshadowed by Jaehaerys, his grandfather, and then the immediate conflict of the Dance of the Dragon. So he's an interesting character, and I'm interested to see how Paddy Considine continues to play him.
Yep. Well, there you have it. We are back in Westeros, man. Oh, I am hyped. I can't wait till next week. We will be back here talking about episode 2. For now, go in wherever you listen to pods. Leave a 5-star rating, 4-star rating, whatever rating. But leave a rating and say, tell us, talk back to us. Give us some of your feedback. Hit us up on Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter and on Instagram. Join our Facebook group. And yeah, we're looking forward to this ride, and see you next week.
Bye, everyone.